Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Obias. Carolina Hurricanes take the L at Madison Square Garden yesterday. They'll be back in action tomorrow. What do they got to do to change? I have some suggestions. Plus, the SEC continues to get more and more annoying. Let's log on to the internet, shall we? It's brought to you by Geico. You got choice of ways that you can save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online to geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Let's get it.
Number five.
Justin Thomas beat Will Zalatoris in a three-hole playoff in the PGA Championship on Sunday, Joe. It was notable because, well, Thomas made a big comeback. It was notable, well, because the leader after the second and third rounds, Mito Pereira, double bogeyed on the 18th to not even be in the playoff. A true meltdown if we've seen one. But also, who wasn't there on Sunday? Tiger Woods shot a 79 in the third round after scrambling to make the cut over the weekend. And then, through his own volition, withdrew before Sunday's final round because of the pain that he was in, that he's and then taxed himself in the situation that he's in physically. So my question to you, if we could have a hot take Monday here, should Tiger Woods shut this thing down?
You want my hot take?
I do.
Tiger Woods should do whatever the hell he feels like doing. If he wants to go out and participate in these major events, let him. He's still a draw. That is something that's a problem for the PGA, I might add. That Tiger Woods, even in this husk of what he was, is still a draw and that people still think he can compete, which gets to my second hot take. Is Tiger's physical ability the problem, or are we the problem? Because every time Tiger goes out there, it's, how's Tiger gonna win? You did it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, man.
But you saw the final score was minus five.
I understand.
Yeah.
Oh, man, XYZ, and here could happen. Or, hey, man, maybe it's still just a success that Tiger Woods completes a weekend.
Yeah.
That's how we should have looked at the Masters, but that's not how people wanted to look at it with the Masters. It was just this hyperactive activity about Tiger being back, and, oh, my goodness, if this is how he was now. Or maybe we just have to accept Tiger for what he is and enjoy the fact that we still get to watch Tiger, period.
We're about 6 weeks away from the Open Championship at St. Andrews. It's the 150th anniversary of the Open. So He has targeted this event as his next event. Easier walking course. You know, I'm with you, though, for his sake. If he could play, let him play. And if he wants to play in these majors, that's what he should do.
Like when towards the end of, say, again, because I will fully admit I was not immersed in the world of golf.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But like we'll use Jack Nicklaus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I almost said Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicklaus. Towards the end of his career, I mean, I guess there's the age factor. He's old, so you just accept, well, he's here, he'll play, it's your opportunity to see him. It's kind of like seeing a legacy rock act. Like, I went to see Bon Jovi a few weeks ago at PNC Arena. Bon Jovi's voice was freaking shot, man. But hey, you know what? He did Live It on a Prayer. I got what I needed, and I moved on. Oh, and Wanted Dead or Alive. And then I moved on with my life. I was good. But I understood that was not the same Bon Jovi from his, you know, Slippery When Wet days. But he was old. I guess for us, we're still having a hard time processing that Tiger isn't that old, but you have to look at him. He's your age. We have to look at him in a different kind of years because of all of the injuries that he sustained on top of the car accident, which put him in the place now. So for all intents and purposes, Tiger Woods is in his 70s, if you will.
Well, he beat himself up physically, too. Yeah. Don't forget with the Navy SEALs training, kind of a chasing a dream of his dad's.
Was it Tom Watson at the British Open a couple years ago where he had like his final walk, like he competed for like wasn't he in contention going into Sunday?
Yeah, he missed a putt on Sunday to win the thing.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. Like that's the best you can hope for.
Sure,
but nobody went into the British Open that year thinking, man,
correct,
Tom Watson's going to compete. I'm going to tell you how he's going to win.
Also at St. Andrews, by the way.
So that's where we kind of have to be with.
I'm not listening to you right now.
No, you're thinking about it. I see the wheels turning. I'm like, oh, I'm going to craft this. Oh, yeah, this is how Tiger's going to win.
Something happened where I was actually right in principle.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
I said he's not going to win a birdie fest.
No.
All I said was these are the type of majors he's potentially going to win.
That
five under was the winning score. So I wasn't necessarily wrong. It's just physically taxing for him right now. It's just too much. So
next up.
Number four.
S&P rankings. Who's hype? Who's hype for some college football S&P rankings, Joe? Bill Conley at ESPN puts these out. It's important to note that S&P is the equivalent of
KenPom.
KenPom.
Yeah.
Right? KenPom is a predictive algorithm that was designed by a guy named Ken Pomeroy. And it's gotten to the point in college basketball where we almost look at KenPom as though it tells you everything that you need to know. It doesn't.
Yeah. It's the Rosetta Stone.
It's a good tool to help understand why basketball teams are the way they are and what they do well. But it's not, because if it was KenPom, then why even have the NCAA tournament, right? Anyway,
You're just like shooting holes in all of my theories today.
Conley's S&P rankings are the equivalent for college football. Earlier in the year, there was an initial S&P rankings that I believe had NC State like second or third. But those change over time. There's comings and goings, the transfer portals and everything else. So now we have the latest S&P rankings heading into the silly season of college football where we talk about previews. Clemson was the number one ACC team at 6. Makes sense given what we know about Clemson, who they bring back. DJ Uiagalelei at quarterback is going to be a bit of an unknown factor. NC State dropped all the way to 18.
Well, they were never in the top 10.
Okay.
There was initial... Bill himself had tweeted out, like, you guys, NC State. Like, he had kind of done the big game boomer thing where he appealed to the base there.
Mm-hmm.
But they were never initially ranked in the top 10.
Okay. Yeah. All right. You're right. I did get duped by Bill Conley's teaser tweet earlier in the year. So NC State comes at 18, which, by the way, I think is about right for this NC State team, knowing what we know about them. You're kind of like rolling your eyes about it. Do you think they should be higher than 18?
No,
where do you think NC State's going to be ranked?
Here's
in the
my
AP
problem.
Top 25?
I woke up today and I saw these tweets.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, I have some number phobia when it comes to football. Like I'm looking at Pittsburgh in these rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh lost in a fairly high profile case. They lost receiver Jordan Addison, who transferred, right? But he transferred since the end of the spring game. He had 100 catches for 1,593 yards last year. He had 17 touchdowns. You're producing a chart that says here's the production returning from last year, and you're saying Pittsburgh hasn't changed significantly with the exit of Jordan Addison. Here's the next highest receiver for Pittsburgh. 47 catches, 650 yards, 6 touchdowns. So the numbers are off there is what I'm getting at. Just from a cursory view.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can't trust the one big number, how do I trust all of your small numbers? That's my only issue with those. And sometimes I need all of those things explained to me like a Bond villain. I was the same way with certain KenPom numbers that I will literally email Ken and be like, Ken, hey, can you dumb this down for me? Please explain this to me so I can move on with my life.
Sure.
I don't know.
I get what you're saying about
Pittsburgh. So I saw two different things about Pittsburgh today, and neither one of them were addressed. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me. And if I can't trust the big number, again, how do I trust the details?
Hey, that's why you play the games ultimately. As far as NC State is concerned, they're about where I think they would be.
Sure.
Honestly.
NC State's schedule is going to be ridiculously easy this year. That's where I would. And I'm always going to look at your schedule and when you play the games and where you play the games. I agree with Clemson. You and I differ on Clemson. But to me, I think NC State's a top 10 team. And part of that's who you have back, and part of that's your schedule. Your schedule is a big, big part of all this.
No, NC State's schedule certainly is going in their favor. I'm not disputing that in any way, shape, or form. I think NC State will probably go into the AP Top 25 preseason poll at 12. That's my prediction.
Feels about right.
And that's about where they should be. Because I felt the same way about like North Carolina. It's like, cool, you might be optimistic about North Carolina, but let's see them actually go out and do it before we start putting them in the top 10.
And I would have said, and I did say the same thing about Carolina last year. I thought their schedule was ridiculously easy last year, and they found a way to stumble over themselves.
Yeah. All right, next up.
Number three.
Teams that don't stumble over themselves, though, the SEC. Well, you know there's this alliance that the ACC's kind of gotten behind, Jim Phillips behind the scenes, right? Getting everyone against the SEC and their expansion of the college football playoff. Do you know what the SEC might do in response, Joe? Well, you see, what had happened was, we'll just stage our own playoff. No, legitimately, Greg Sankey told ESPN that it's at least under consideration for the SEC to have their own college football playoff, an 8-team college football playoff of, drumroll, just SEC teams. This is This is not, again, this is not some random source telling Pete Tamel this is Greg Sankey saying we need to engage in blue sky thinking, which is you detach from reality. What are the full range of possibilities? And Florida AD Scott Strickland said, we have an incredibly strong league, one that will be even stronger once Oklahoma and Texas join. The focus should be on how we as a league use that strength to further position the SEC as we face new realities. Commissioner Sankey has encouraged our ADs to think creatively, and an SEC-only playoff is a different idea that we should absolutely consider as an option.
Go away. It's fine. Go.
Go take your ball and do what you think.
Do what you want to do, all man. Right. Nah, that's where I'm at with the SEC. If you think you're so great, go and do it. I mean, they certainly got the financial backing from ESPN. So go do it. Fine. Go stage your own playoff and crown your own champion. And you're like, you know, a North Korean dictator who always gets holes in ones. I mean, that's what this is. We are the college football champions because we said so. In a way, though, I respect that because it actually goes towards what I've been arguing we should go back to in college football. Let's go back to the days where everybody just claimed to be the champion. We didn't play you. You didn't play us. We're in this bowl game against this other team, and you're over here on the East Coast. You know what? We're the champs. Let the arguments ensue, because that's really what college football is all about anyway, right? It's about arguments.
Used to be. Literally used to crown the champion before the bowl games.
I know. I just want the SEC to just go away. All right, next up.
Number two.
To the NBA, where the Golden State Warriors look like a squad that might just win the whole thing. And the reason why more and more people are coming around to this, myself included, is that the Golden State Warriors are finding different ways to win. You know, the Dallas Mavericks come into this series with one of the best players in the NBA, Luka Doncic, and the Warriors are out here doing it with defense. It's not necessarily what you see in the past where their offense takes over and the murder ball, the death lineup, things that we had seen out of the Golden State Warriors in the past. No, this is a different way of them going about it where their key players aren't necessarily filling it up. That's scary. That's scary going forward for the Golden State Warriors, which does get to an interesting question about how we'll view Steph Curry if they actually go out there and win the whole thing. That'll be what, 4 rings for Steph Curry? We don't necessarily talk about Steph Curry the same way we do about LeBron James or how, you know, we're sitting here having these conversations about the greats to ever do it. Well, Steph Curry's going to have 2 things in his favor. 1, the rings. 2, whether you want to admit it or not, Steph Curry did more as a player to change how we view basketball than LeBron James in the last 10 years.
Steph Curry has done more to change basketball than Michael Jordan, than anyone, quite frankly, because he's smaller.
Yes.
And he's did it in a way where there were a lot of people who thought, you know what, I can go out and make 35-foot shots. Anyone can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you laugh, go to a rec game. Go to any rec game in any gym in this country, and you will see how Steph Curry changed basketball. You can't dunk from the foul line like Michael Jordan did.
No.
You can't be 6'9 and a 240-pound linebacker playing basketball the way that LeBron James is. But you can be, or you can delude yourself into thinking you could be Steph Curry. Never mind the gene pool that he was swimming in.
This is true,
where
too.
It came from, the head start that he had.
This is true, too.
You know, his pops, his mom was a heck of a volleyball player as well at Virginia Tech.
Although he needs better court vision because he's getting confused with Theo Pinson and what he's wearing on the court.
I was going to say, the only thing slowing the Warriors down in the series, they're now up 3-0 against the Mavericks, is Theo Pinson.
So this happened in Game 2 against the Dallas Mavericks. Theo Pinson, former Carolina Tar Heel, he's with Dallas Mavericks, although he's not playing, so he's in street clothes.
Yes.
And I think on Tuesday he was wearing a white and blue Supreme shirt, long sleeve shirt. And here is Steph Curry accidentally passing the ball to Theo Pinson in the bench area.
Dinwiddie. Curry lost it. vacuums it in. Oh, and he threw it away.
And see, that's the problem sometimes because, you know, they're standing
white,
up like Theo Pinson with a white jersey on. You think that's your team.
That's exactly right. That's a good call.
So
Theo Pinson standing there on the sideline with his left hand up, by the way.
Yeah,
he was intentionally trying to screw with him.
He was trolling Steph Curry, and it worked. So ahead of game three, an NBA official walked up to Theo Pinson and asked him to change his shirt because it was a similar situation.
Do me a favor. Is this a crazy? Can you change your color shirt?
Yes.
Thank you. Will you?
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Because it's the same color as them, and you're going to be in the way. If you could do that for me. Yeah, I'd even buy it for you. It don't match. This don't match anyway.
You buy it for me, I'll do it.
I got you. You give it to me, send me the bill.
That was my favorite part, the official telling Theo Pinson, you don't match anyway, so what's the big deal?
Postscript there. Pinson did not get the shirt,
nope.
Wore the white, and then the Mavericks were fined.
Yes.
Because it was the third time that they've had an issue.
Now, what's interesting is Theo Pinson had tweeted out, hey, make this make sense to me, and he showed a screen grab of the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics, where it's a very similar situation where you got a crowded bench area and a bunch of dudes in street clothes, and you don't know who's doing what. I mean, the NBA has guys on top of you. Seats are there. They filled out the benches, maximized. Like, there's a lot of things going on. And yeah, I can see where that leads to a little bit of confusion, but if you're not complaining about that to the league, well, then I guess they're not going to say anything in the Boston-Miami series. Which gets us to that series, which I can't make any sense. The Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics, after three games, the Heat are up 2-1. Boston Celtics are dealing with injuries, but so are the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler went out in this game with an inflamed knee injury. You'd think that the Boston Celtics could come back without Jimmy Butler in the lineup. They started to do that, but the Miami Heat have an ability physically that can bother the Boston Celtics. But we do know this about the Celtics. Defensively, they're superior than the Miami Heat at this point, number one. Number two, we've seen the Boston Celtics bounce back and adjust after what looks like turning points in a series. We especially saw it against the Milwaukee Bucks.
These two teams are about as evenly matched as you can be.
Yeah.
They play in Miami. The Heat win game one. Marcus Smart, Al Horford don't play. Those two guys return. Celtics win game two. You're thinking, okay, this thing is going to be all Celtics from here, right? They go to Boston. The Heat win game three without Jimmy Butler for most of that game. And now Butler and Tyler Hero both. Butler is going to attempt to play tonight. Tyler Hero out, though, for the Heat. So Celtics are 7-point favorite tonight. That's a surprising number in between these two teams.
Next up.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one. We're number one.
Stop me if you heard this one before. The Carolina Hurricanes, 5-on-5, play a pretty damn good game on the road. The problem is they don't score goals. In this particular case, they have a limited amount of power play opportunities but don't score. The other team that they've skated better than 5-on-5 gets just about the same amount of power play opportunities, but they score on theirs on the road. They lose. That's where the Hurricanes are right now, going into game four at Madison Square Garden. Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, post game after the loss.
They all kind of suck and you don't win, but I think overall we definitely had our opportunities to win. I mean, it felt pretty good. It felt good the way we were going. It just, like I said, we couldn't get pucked through the net. So
that's Rod Brindamore after the game. He addressed the power play and taking that type of game most nights, but again, having to cash in on the power play.
Yeah, I would take that game most nights, to be quite honest with you, and come away probably, I haven't looked at, I'm assuming we had pretty good opportunities, like great A's, and we did have some seconds, we were around the net, you know, it's just, like I said, we didn't capitalize that power play we need to, and they did, and that was kind of the, I keep boiling down to that. It surely shouldn't, because, you know, we get a 1-5-on-5 somewhere else. Maybe it doesn't, but we got to come through there.
That's right.
Especially at the end.
That's Rod Brindamore, head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. My issue with the Hurricanes right now is they haven't done anything yet to give you an indication that this team has it, if that makes sense. You look at the Rangers, how they got here. How did they get here?
Well, they're down 3-1 in the opening round.
And they powered through Tampa Bay Lightning and what they're doing to the Florida Panthers. Now, this is two separate conversations. This is a little bit of me looking for the you were right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I admire your restraint here.
But hey, look, throughout April, everybody was having a meltdown because the Panthers were the hottest team in the NHL. They're going to win the President's Cup. And everybody's, oh my goodness, this is terrible. And the Hurricanes were in a little bit of a slump. And I kept saying, cool, you win April. Cool, you win the President's Trophy. Now remind me again, how many President's Trophy winners have gone on to win the Stanley Cup?
Not many.
Not a lot.
None since 13.
So to me, I never got caught up in how the Panthers are playing because that can easily make you some paper champs, all right? But the Lightning, a team much like the Boston Bruins that we might have written off earlier than we should have. Now, I'm not trying to tell you that the Boston Bruins were in some sort of cup window, but what I am telling you is that they were a tough out, a little tougher than we might have given them credit. Tampa Bay Lightning are showing you, oh, hey, all those jokey jokes you made about us being over the cap and it's easy to do in the weird pandemic season, and there's no way they can repeat as cup champs again. Those dudes certainly know how to win, and they got Andrei Vasilevskiy still, who's making it incredibly difficult for the Panthers to break through.
They're playing as good right now as Florida was in the regular season, the difference being the money's on the table right now.
Exactly, and Tampa knows how to do it. So that's my issue with the Carolina Hurricanes right now. They're holding serve. They have not shown me yet that they've got that thing, okay? They had an opportunity to do it in the Boston series to wrap it up in Game 6. They didn't. Brought it back here for Game 7. Home ice advantage is there for a reason. But I do find it interesting that Gallant, the head coach of the Rangers, was... Yeah, you know what? We can take this thing to 7. Because you found it interesting after the game where he talked about, oh, you know what? You know, we'll win our games, they win their games, and we'll just take a chance in Game 7.
Yeah, I've never heard a coach say that before. Basically conceding Game 5, right?
Well, what did his team just do?
He did what they said they were going to do. It's maybe a different attitude than what we have here when we follow college sports, right? Mm-hmm. We follow the one and done of the NCAA tournament. We follow the college football season where, you know, once a team loses, if they're not named Alabama, they're probably out of the race, you know?
Yeah.
But in pro sports and in hockey, in these 7-game series, it's a race to 4. You don't have to get there 4-0 every time. You can get there 4 out of 7. You just have to be the first one 4.
Now, the Carolina Hurricanes technically have not started a playoff game yet, or a playoff series, I should say.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you know,
because they've held serve at home. And in an ideal situation, you can just sit there and go, well, they'll just win all their home games and win the Stanley Cup, provided that things break out their way for the rest of the playoff series. Now, with Tampa, they would get home ice advantage, right?
They would. The Canes would, yes.
Cool. No problems there.
And the Avalanche are on the ropes, too.
What? Oh, no. Well, you know what? Maybe I'm the fool here, and maybe the Carolina Hurricanes have it right. If we just win all of our home games, we're easy peasy. We're good. We'll win the cup. Would you take that? Doesn't matter how you get through 4, right? You take that? Of course, I'm sitting here being somewhat facetious because we know it's not that easy.
Right.
And I need the Carolina Hurricanes to show me Tuesday night that they got that. Game 3 was predictable both in the Boston series and this New York series. These are two teams that were not going to go out without a fight. You weren't going to sweep them, okay? So New York came and did the thing that we expect them to do in their first home game in the series. It's this game that I think means more. Last time we saw the Carolina Hurricanes in this situation, they crapped their pants in Boston. What's going to happen on Tuesday? I don't think they're going to crap their pants, but you better freaking win. Show it to me. Let's go. Like, that's kind of where I'm at with the Hurricanes. Let's freaking go. Show it to me. Guess we'll find out Tuesday night.